Welcome back to our Step for Numbs podcast. In our first episode, we introduced the project and its mission to make drug and device testing more human relevant. Today, it's all about turning ideas into action. This episode is all about the four pilot studies, where the idea of implementing NAMs in the biotech and pharma sectors becomes reality. We will start with a quick speed dating round, where each pilot sums up their project in a few words, followed by a deeper dive into what they are really testing, validating, and why it matters. At the end, we will find out who can join and what's in for our participants. You can also use the show notes to jump directly to the pilot that you are interested in. Here are the voices behind the pilot studies, introducing who they are and what they are working on. Let's start with you, Mihai.
My name is Mihai Lomora. I'm a lecturer in biomaterial chemistry and funded investigator leading the Cerebro Machine Lab that is focused on drug delivery and organ-on-chip systems at the University of Galway. In the Step4NAM project, we are working to develop an in vitro lung-on-chip model.
Thank you, Mihai. And I see you are not alone today. You're joined by your colleague Sugna, who is also part of the project.
Hi, I'm Sugna. I'm the research assistant working in the Cerebro Machines Lab at the University of Galway, who is working on this lung-on-chip model to study various drug testing platforms for patients with acute respiratory disease.
Thank you. And let's stay in Galway. Barbara, can you introduce yourself and your team?
So my name is Dr. Barbara McNicholas. I'm from the University of Galway, which is in the west of Ireland. And I am a consultant intensivist. I am working with a team that includes Professor Michael Madden, who is Professor of Computer Science, Dr. Neil Madden, who is a senior lecturer in mathematics. And we also have Dr. Jerry Shin, who is a postdoctoral researcher in mathematics. And we're working on a project to develop a multi-organ digital twin system for critical illness.
And now we switch to our pilot study from Germany.
So, hi everyone, my name is Hanna Vorenpa. I'm working in the Trias and the Tübingen, that is situated in the Tübingen city, Germany, and the University of Tübingen, and we are doing multi-site validation of organ and chips.
Thank you, Hanna. And now we switch back to Ireland again, but this time to the Atlantic Technological University, ATU.
Okay, so I am Dr. Janice O'Sullivan. I'm a lecturer in biomedical technologies in the Atlantic Technological University in Galway City, Ireland, where myself and my colleagues, Dr. Eugene McCarthy and Dr. Joaquin Penida, are working on the validation of benchtop vascular models for testing thrombectomy devices.
And for our final pilot study, we switch to Luxembourg.
Yes, sure. So my name is Jens Rambon. I'm professor for cellular and developmental biology at the University of Luxembourg. And I lead a research team at the Luxembourg Center for Systems Biomedicine.
Thank you, Jens. We've heard now who's behind our pilots. Now let's find out what they are actually doing. We will begin with the lung-on-chip pilot. Mihai, could you tell us more about your project and what you are actually validating?
Yeah, sure. Our project focuses on developing a lung-on-chip model, replicating healthy and diseased lung environments, with the aim to reduce or, if possible, even replace animal testing for a more accurate and personalized treatment approach for acute lung injury patients. In terms of validation, we'll be validating the lung-on-chip model's accuracy and reliability in replicating real human lung responses to injury and drug exposure, using both healthy and patient serum to simulate real-world conditions. In terms of uniqueness, our lung-on-chip model combines an integrated 3D cellular microfluidic system along with the patient serum to create a highly relevant and personalized drug testing platform, setting it apart from other approaches as part of the Step4NAM project. This unique combination enables us to study the effects of injury and also test potential treatments in a controlled and personalized environment.
And Sugna, maybe you can tell us a bit more how you plan to develop your lung-on-chip model.
The lung-on-chip model will be developed using a commercial microfluidic chip containing a porous separation membrane that recreates the air-liquid interface of the lung. The lung epithelial cell will be seated on the air-facing side. A collagenesium will represent an intermediate membrane, and endothelial cells will be cultured on the opposite side. So the short-term goal is to use specialized system to study the intermediate effects of flow and shear stress on cellular morphology, viability, inflammation, and barrier integrity. The long-term goal is to establish a dynamic perfusion model enabling extended cultures, say up to 3 weeks, with real-time imaging and monitoring of the oxygen and pH levels to closely mimic physiological lung responses under various drug treatments.
So your model wants to recreate the lung's microenvironment and functions, but what does it model better than animal studies?
The lung-on-chip model better replicates the human lung structure, and it functions better than animal models, which often differ in anatomy, immune responses, and cellular signaling. By incorporating human lung cells and mimicking the air-liquid interface, it accurately captures the interactions and physiological responses that animal studies fail to replicate, leading to more accurate predictions of the human outcomes in drug testing platforms and in modeling of this disease.
And how do you ensure that your model reflects real patient data?
Here we are working with clinical partners to collect real patient data from intensive care clinics, which will be used to develop and validate our models, ensuring they accurately reflect the real-world conditions. Also, this collaboration enables us to create models that are relevant to clinical applications and can be used to improve patient outcomes.
Thank you for the insights on how a microfluidic lung and chip system can bring us closer to more realistic testing. Next, we stay in Galway, but moving into the digital world. Barbara, can you give us an introduction on your pilot in one sentence and how you validate your NAM and what's unique in your pilot?
So in one sentence, our pilot aims to recreate a digital twin that integrates lung and kidney function to predict our critically ill patients, particularly those with acute respiratory distress syndrome who are on renal replacement therapy, respond to fluid and drug therapies. So how can we validate and test these? So we're validating whether this integrated model can accurately reproduce real patient trajectories, things like blood gases, urine outputs, and hemodynamic responses. We'll test whether the twin can predict how changes of intubation, fluid, drug dosing affect lung and kidney performance. So what's unique about our project? It's built on a very well-established lung model. So we're going to build the first multi-organ digital twin in the program that couples respiratory and renal systems with real ICU data. It'll bridge physiology, data science, and clinical medicine and aim to deliver a tool that could really assist researchers understand trajectories in real world, not just in experimental settings, to see how their drug or how their intervention might affect a patient.
Thank you. And what is a digital twin in medicine and how does your system link different organs?
Okay, so I'm the intensivist in the group. So I can speak very well about why we need this, but I think it's important to be able to verbalize what a doctor or what a clinician scientist will understand about a digital twin. So a digital twin, from our perspective, is a virtual replica of a patient that continuously updates as new data comes in. We will use established physiological mathematical models, which have been tested from previous experiments, to model how the lung, heart, and kidneys are interacting. This will simulate how one organ affects the other, i.e. we know that positive pressure ventilation impacts kidney perfusion or fluid balance. Machine learning then will be used to optimize these mathematical models, which currently take a very long time to run. And our aim is to make this something that can be applicable at the bedside. When we understand how a patient would interact and would act based on their ventilatory or data parameters, when we apply a new intervention like a drug, we can see whether that intervention changes how that patient might have behaved. And this will tell us whether this is a real or whether this is just an expected trajectory of the disease.
And what does your model do better than animal studies?
So our model is based on human physiological data. At the moment, when we want to see what happens between the lung and the kidneys, we have to use physiological models from animals that are very different compared to how humans are. So, for example, one of the biggest differences between humans and animals, particularly in ARDS, is that we generally sleep on our back. Animals the other way, sleep on their front. And one of the most important interventions in ARDS is flipping people onto their tummies, which changes how the blood perfusion and air ventilates the lungs. Because of this, when we use animal models, they're not exact replicas. So developing a simulated replica that we can continue to hone and to improve based on physiological and clinical data is going to probably be better than depending on the animal models where the physiology is entirely different.
You mentioned it is more human relevant. And can you elaborate a bit more? How do you ensure that your model reflects real patient data?
Yeah, so the model takes specific parameters from individual patients. So these will be blood gas, ventilator type data. And then we're also working on establishing the renal data. It's based in intensive care units. So intensive care units often measure a huge number of physiological variables on patients. And this is really important because these patients are critically ill. And it's standard that we would have data, minute by minute data on ventilation, minute by minute data on blood pressure, heart rate, and hourly urine output. In addition to this, we do very frequent laboratory analysis of these physiological variables. This is the type of data that's needed to build models. We also have the ability to assess very quickly, are these models correct once they're established? So there's good experimental data from the ARDS digital twin that it emulates and simulates very well what happens in the ARDS patient. However, the main problem with these models currently is they take a very long, long time to run. So the aim is to try, one, optimize the speed of how they run, and two, integrate how the kidney aspect of it integrates, which again is an extremely important part of understanding how patients will respond to treatments.
But how can this model help pharma and biotech companies?
One of the problems with doing research in critically ill patients is understanding the trajectory of the patient as expected based on their clinical status. If we give an intervention and it makes the patient better, we need to understand, was the patient getting better anyways? Or if we give the intervention and the patient gets worse, was the patient getting worse anyways? Because if we want to test the real attributable effect of the intervention, we need to be very clear on where the patient was going. And having an in silico replica of the patient, which would tell us, this is the trajectory of the patient. This is how much of an effect that drug had. This is very likely a drug effect rather than a clinical expected trajectory. It would be very useful for pharma and biopharma and medical technology to understand how much a drug or an intervention is actually going to affect in real time a patient, rather than testing this and using more statistical modeling on animal studies or very, very expensive clinical trials. This will be a tool to see, is this something that we should be trialing more and moving into phase 1 or phase 2 trials?
I think this is a great example of how data and computation can bring us closer to patient-specific testing. Next, we move to Tübingen and the organ-on-chip pilot, where science meets standardization. Hanna, can you give us a short overview of your pilot?
So our pilot study focuses on standardized testing of organ and chips between different laboratories in several EU countries to assess the reliability and reproducibility of organ and chip test systems. So we will perform so-called ring trial, that is a multi-laboratory study to assess the reliability and reproducibility of these organ and chip systems in a specific application or a context of use. The study involves laboratories performing the same test with the same substances to evaluate the consistency of the results between different sites and also in different hands. In more details, we will test the functionality with known test compounds and assess the dose responsiveness of the test system. Additionally, we will test the predictive capacity of organ and chip using unknown substances. Our key goal is to determine if the method produces similar results between different laboratories, including academic and industry partners. The ability to mimic tissue-level functions with organelle chip systems is completely unique and has been earlier possible only with animal models. And the novelty comes from the unique combination of cell biology and microtechnology that enables improved mimicry of human biology, for example, blood perfusion inside a tissue. Overall, I think that here in Stepronams, we have a good representation of state-of-the-art methods that have a lot to give, but that have not yet reached their full potential in industrial use.
Can you tell us a bit more? Why is it important to do standardized testing of organ-on-chip system across multiple labs?
So only this way we can truly assess the robustness and repeatability of the test system. We chose this ring trial approach since we want to build trust and confidence in the organ-on-chip technology to improve its industrial adoption. And the best way of doing this is to stress the test system not only in our laboratory and by own scientists, but between different laboratories and varying people. Importantly, we can evaluate whether our test protocols are ready to be implemented as SOPs, so standard operating procedures, and be employed in the interlaboratory settings.
And why did you choose to assess reproducibility and what's included in the assessment?
Reproducibility is the key for industrial adaptation and for regulatory acceptance of new test systems, such as these organelle chips. Pharmaceutical and biotech companies really rely on reproducible data. So we need to ensure that the results received are reliable, consistent, and scientifically valid. And this includes testing with known and unknown compounds and stressing the performance in the hands of different actors in different laboratories.
And how does the project build trust in organ-on-chip technologies?
That our study will address some of the key questions that currently limit the industrial use and regulatory acceptance of organ-on-chip test systems as new approach methods. With our industry partners, we will assess the performance of these test systems in real life. Data produced in different facilities will increase the trust and reliability with the independently verified results. Evidence showing that the test system works reliably across different settings is actually a key indicator for the further use of these systems.
Thanks, Hannah. Really interesting to hear how your team is setting like new standards for organ-on-chip validation. Now we're shifting from biological system to mechanical ones. Our next stop is in Ireland, where ATU is mimicking part of the human body. Janice, tell us what this pilot is all about.
Okay, well, in the Met Centre at ATU, we use benchtop vascular models. So these are highly realistic models of the body's blood vessels, which can be used to test new devices. So it's this system that's going to be validated within this program.
And I also know that you can replicate a stroke event in your model. How do you do this?
These models are designed to mimic the geometry and flow conditions of human arteries. So we can evaluate how a device performs in a very controlled and repeatable way. This is a huge advantage when you're refining a design because you can see exactly how it interacts with different types of clots or vessel shapes without any variability. So to replicate a stroke event, we get 3D scans from stroke patients, and these allow us to replicate different challenges of the vasculature. Once the design stage is complete, production of the model can then take place, and this is done by 3D printing or molding practices. We can replicate occlusions, which are the blockages that are caused by blood clots within the vessels. These can have different compositions. So there's red blood cell clots. These are easier to retrieve. There's also fibrin-rich clots, and these are harder to retrieve. Generally, you would need more passes of the retrieval device with these types of clots, and often retrieval of these can fail. So in summary, we design the vascular model, we produce the model itself, we reproduce the clot, and then fluid dynamics are set up to create a physiological flow rate within the system to mimic the blood flow. So these are safe, reproducible, and they can directly test mechanical interactions and fluid dynamics.
And why is this approach better to test new stroke devices?
So by using vascular models, we can carry out testing more safely and ethically without the need for live animal experiments in early stages. They're reproducible, They're reusable, they're also cheaper, and one can collect engineering grade data and iteration, which is of course essential before clinical translation. It's a better and a more practical approach for testing new stroke devices, particularly in the early and mid stages of development. It's a consistent and highly controllable test system as well, and you can standardize vessel geometry, flow rate and clot composition, which allows precise measurement of device performance. So whether you're looking at retrieval forces, clot fragmentation or aspiration efficiency. Because the conditions are repeatable, results are comparable across various test setups as well, which is ideal for refining design parameters, material properties or deployment mechanics. You can also compare with predicate devices using the same model, which is very valuable. This level of control is impossible in animal or clinical settings where anatomy or vessel tortuosity and clot type can vary widely. Beyond this, it's safe, ethical, cost-effective early stage testing. These vascular models, they de-risk the early development by providing a safe and repeatable and ethically sound testing system as well before moving to biological models or clinical validation. So there's no ethical or regulatory barriers and no requirement for a surgical or biological handling as well. Yes, so this failure analysis of devices can be done without risk, which is a huge benefit. And ultimately, it's going to accelerate the design test refine cycle, but it also reduces costs and it aligns with the 3R principles of ethical research.
You already mentioned that it will reduce the reliance on animal experience. Maybe you can elaborate a bit more on this.
Yeah, I can add to that a bit more. In terms of reducing reliance on animal experiments, if you're able to fully characterize a device in the artificial systems first, the move to animal or clinical testing only happens when it's absolutely necessary and with much better evidence behind it as well. So this really helps us reduce reliance on animal models. It speeds up innovation as well and maintains a strong focus on ethical development. So the benchtop models, they kind of act as an ethical filtering stage. So they replace the exploratory animal studies with a reproducible non-biological testing, and they ensure that any of the subsequent in vivo work that might have to happen is minimal, justified and highly targeted. They can, these models can replicate the mechanical and flow characteristics of human cerebral vessels closely enough to test device performance without using live animals. It just ultimately reduces the number of animal experiments.
And which medtech companies are relevant for this pilot?
So we would be looking for companies who are developing neurothrombectomy devices, companies who are in the testing stage for their prototype. So it will be, where they're corresponding to or above TRL3.
Thank you, Janice, for the great look at how benchtop simulations are transforming medtech testing. To wrap up our tour of the Step for NAMS pilots, we are heading to Luxembourg. Jens, maybe you can tell us what's your pilot about in one sentence and what will be validated or tested exactly. And maybe you can elaborate what makes your pilot unique within Step for NAMS.
Okay, so first question, what is our pilot about in one sentence? What we are doing in this pilot is we are aiming at finding out whether we can use Parkinson's patient-specific brain organoids to predict the failure of drugs that have been tested previously in clinical trials. So if I make another sentence, basically there's drugs that have been tested in clinical trials that failed and that obviously cost a lot of money. And now we would like to address whether we could have predicted that failure. So I think that is unique because that never has been done. Like organoids, brain organoids, patient-specific brain organoids in drug discovery are a pretty new thing. And I think we are particularly the first ones who really retrospectively try to see, could we have predicted failure?
And why did you choose Parkinson's disease for this pilot as a target disease?
So we are choosing for this particular pilot Parkinson's disease because this is clearly where the expertise of the lab is. We are doing in vitro modeling of Parkinson's disease since the last 15 years. And then why we have selected Parkinson's is actually my ignorance of the field when we started working on it. Because at that stage, when we started to work on it, I thought Parkinson's is a fantastic model for neurodegeneration because a single cell type in a specific brain region is affected. And that is reflected particularly how superficial my overview of the literature was, because it is ultra complex. It is multiple cell types in multiple brain regions, and also cells beyond organs, tissues beyond the brain are affected. So, well, but then we got stuck to Parkinson's, and then we continue to work on it and try to tackle it in its full complexity.
Could you explain what this means in practice and how these organoids help us better understand such a complex disease?
So brain organoids have the unique feature that they are from human and that they are really particular for one individual human, namely from the person from which the initial sample has been taken. I probably can talk a few sentences about like the process. So it starts basically with a patient or a healthy control individual where we take a skin biopsy or a blood sample and then takes those cells and turn them into induced pluripotent stem cells. These are stem cells that in all their characteristics are very, very similar to embryonic stem cells. And then we expose them to a cocktail of growth factors, chemical signals, an environment that instructs them to differentiate into three-dimensional structures that in many characteristics are very similar to the human midbrain, which is a primary region which is affected in Parkinson's. And the interesting thing is now if we do that from a patient, these brain organoids that are specific for that patient, we capitulate quite a few of the features of the characteristics that we actually see in the patient. Loss of dopaminergic neurons, neuroinflammation, protein aggregation. And this is something we have never seen before in 2D cell culture models, and that is also often not very well recapitulated in animal models.
And can you test also drugs that are already on the market?
We can in principle also test drugs that are on the market, but once they're on the market for Parkinson's, they will have been tested already. And it's probably still interesting to see what they do in a brain organoid in a way as a positive control. But obviously the new knowledge that you gain is larger if you go for something that's still under development. What can be interesting is also if you're an SME and listen to this podcast and you have a drug that is probably currently tested for Alzheimer's, Huntington's, whatever. You maybe want to see whether it could have a cross indication also in PD. This is something that could be tested as well. Because often, like cellular molecular mechanisms are shared between these neurodegenerative diseases, and something that affects a process that is probably fairly generally be deregulated in neurodegeneration, it might be also beneficial in PD.
Thank you, Jens, and thanks to the rest of you. We've seen how digital twins, organ-on-chip models, organoids, and benchtop simulations are shaping a new way of testing drugs or medical devices. Now, let's turn to the people who might want to get involved. Who should apply to your pilot, and what's the key advantage of taking part? Starting with Mihai from the long-on-chip model.
Sure, I can answer to this. So we were seeking partners, particularly SMEs with expertise in microfluidics and perfusion systems that are compatible with lung-on-chip applications. Now, in terms of the benefit for the participants, our goal is to help these partners to test, refine, and validate their technologies ahead of market release, providing real-world functionality data, and then hopefully accelerating their path to commercialization.
And Barbara, what's your target group?
So our aim would be to have partners who would be willing to either provide clinical ICU data that we can integrate into the model and ultimately test in a virtual clinical trial. And our other group of interest would be pharma or medical device companies who want to develop in silico trials in the field of ARDS or renal replacement therapy related, renal replacement and therapy requirements in critically ill patients.
Hannah, and what will you do with your partners?
With our industry partners, we will assess the performance of these test systems in real life. Data produced in different facilities will increase the trust and reliability with the independently verified results. Evidence showing that the test system works reliably across different settings is actually a key indicator for the further use of these systems.
And Dennis, you mentioned it earlier, but can you please give us also insight? Who are you searching for and what are the benefits?
Okay, so as I said, companies who are developing neurothrombectomy devices and who are in the testing stage for their prototype, if they have a prototype that they would like to test, they can test it within our models. We have fluoroscopy imaging suite as well. So this can, you know, it enhances the testing that they can do. In terms of early to mid-stage testing, if they're using our vascular models, they can really de-risk early development by using these repeatable and ethically sound testing models before moving to the biological models or clinical validation. So it will really kind of help accelerate, like I said before, the design test refine cycle. And it'll also obviously reduce costs hugely for them because animal testing has a massive cost associated with it. So this can really improve things for smaller companies, especially here.
And Jens, who should apply to you?
Pretty much everyone who has a potential therapeutic for Parkinson's disease should look at it and should potentially apply. Ideally, something that's disease modifying or modulating, so not symptomatic treatments, but treatments that are, for example, neuroprotective or anti-inflammatory, these kind of things. I think for the benefits for the companies or the other institutions that apply and are selected is that they get a test of their potential therapeutic in a quite predictive model for the disease. So they get a really valuable data set out of this. And when I say therapeutic, I explicitly say not small molecule because the model is not restricted to small molecules. It can be viruses, peptides, antibodies, RNA. So we have tested all of those in the past. So really different modalities can be tested in the organoid.
A big thank you to our pilot partners for providing valuable insights in their topics. If you are interested in joining our pilot studies, please have a look at our open call or visit our website for more information. In addition to the pilot studies, project team is assessing outcomes of our desk research on regulatory and technical barriers to the adoption of NAMs. These initial findings will be presented and discussed during our upcoming workshop on December 2nd at the BioFit conference in Strasbourg, France. Participation in the workshop does not require separate registration, however, a valid BioFit ticket is necessary to access the venue. You can register via the BioFit website and use the promo code NAMS in capital letters underscore 25 discount to obtain a 25% reduction on the ticket price. Finally, do not miss our next episode where we will share key insights from our Step4NAMS workshop at the BioFit conference and introduce the Step4NAMS training program.